I think one of the most important teachings is to learn to trust yourself. If there is a secret to spiritual unfolding, it really is finding that depth of trust and the reason it's so hard for most people is that we don't trust ourself, we trust our mind. And the mind is very limited and in many ways untrustworthy. It's filled with information that has been programmed by so many different sources. Some of those sources are quite faulty. Some of the programs were put in when you were very small and you aren't even aware of what's inside you, and yet you trust it. And when you trust your mind and it fails you, which it often will, you will feel betrayed. You will feel frightened. You may look to other minds to try to trust them, or you may look to the revered teachings of the various religions and just simply trust them. But when I say to trust yourself, the implication is that you know yourself. And in the deepest spiritual sense, you do know yourself. You just don't know the self in a conscious way, because most of us know ourselves unconsciously. We are ourselves. And the extraordinary familiarity with that self keeps us from knowing it. We know our minds because we observe our minds. We observe them in action, we tap in, we check it out, we use it for configuring different sort of life strategies. But the self, you cannot know as a separate thing, because there is no separation. You are yourself. It is yourself that observes and knows your mind. But what knows the self? What knows you? The only answer to that is that you are the very act of knowing, that you are consciousness of self, and that the discovery of or the awakening to who you are is a very subtle and very, very simple process. I've described this a million times, that Rudy said, you are a 1/16 of an inch away from yourself. All you have to do is sort of step back and go, ah. You, in a sense, know you're there in yourself. because of its deep, comforting familiarity. It's a little bit like when you sit down after a long day's work in front of the TV or in front of a newspaper. You just sit back and you just kind of... That's really yourself. When you settle in. When you just feel at home, at peace, comfortable. That's you. You're not thinking about anything. Your mind isn't engaged. You're not judging your performance of the day. You're not worrying about tomorrow. You're just there. And in a certain sense, that's as good as it gets, except for one element, that usually you're totally unconscious of being yourself. You're in it. You're experiencing it. You're going, ah. But you're not aware that you're doing it. If you had a really good spiritual teacher sitting next to you at that moment, they would go, that. And the minute they did that, you'd probably lose it. What's he talking about? What was that? It's so familiar, so easy, so absolutely present that we tend to ignore it. That which is most familiar, the air you breathe, the body you walk around in, unless it's uncomfortable to you, is invisible to you. One of the only ways to become aware is through discomfort, through pain. Then you go, oh, now it's reflecting itself in a way. It's one of the gifts of pain. We don't love it, but it makes us aware. I have a body. If you can't breathe, you're suddenly aware of air. And if you're in a very discomforted state, you're aware that there is another state which you would rather be in. That other state is the state that you are normally in, and even truly in your discomforting state, if you dive deep in yourself, it's still there. Or if you take that 16th of an inch step backwards, it's still there. It's like, oh, even in the most awful, discomfort, it's there. The real secret of life is living in that space, trusting it above all else. Because it is the space from which all knowledge, all wisdom, all love, all knowing, all truth, all consciousness springs. But instead, we live from our mind, which knows very little, which is very insecure in most ways, that is very much prone to emotionalism, to misguiding directivity. And so we walk around feeling deeply, deeply insecure in our lives, because what do we fall back on? What do we go toward? If you can't trust your mind, what can you trust? Well, until you know yourself, you really don't have anything to trust. Until you know yourself, you're really lost, because there's no rudder in the water. There's nothing steering you through life. Your mind is not good at that. Your mind is wave to wave. You know, it's like, now what, now what, now what? And you try to discover all of these survival strategies based on things that worked for you before. Your mind tells you, you know, I'm beautiful, people will love me, or I'm smart, people will respond to that, or I'm charming, so people will listen to me and do what I say. And all these things get you through until suddenly you lose your looks, or your mind isn't quite so good, or your charm doesn't work on somebody. Then you're in deep trouble. But the one source of absolute assurance, if you will, in how to live, in how to meet this very moment, is yourself. Finding yourself is the entire purpose of spiritual work. People dramatize it, they romanticize it. You know, they climb the Himalayas to find the one monk sitting in a cave who can tell them who their self is. What's the secret of life? You know, you see that cartoon everywhere. What's the secret of life? It's always a stupid answer. But the idea that you have to go up to a cave in the middle of the Himalayas to ask somebody, what's the secret, is already, in a sense, absurd. Because where is there to go to find out that it's right here? That it has always been here, and you used to know that. When you were a child, you completely knew it. You actually knew it in a more almost cognitive way. You would kind of curl up in yourself. When things weren't good, you kind of pull the blanket over your head and you kind of go back to yourself. You knew to go there. You knew that was a place of salvation. That was a place of, I'll be all right. Somehow I know I'll be all right. And then you get to be an adult and you forget you can go there. You don't know where to go to be all right. So you go to everything external that doesn't really work. You go to the pills, you go to the alcohol, you go to the sex, you go to whatever it is that's going to make you all right for a few moments, but you forget. Go back. Take the blanket. Cover yourself with a sheet. Feel yourself. Go, oh, it's just me. And something in you knows that space. It knows you. For many of us, that space feels like a child, and we don't trust it because it's a child space. We know it as a child, so therefore it doesn't have any maturity, but that's not true. It's as available to an adult as it is to a child, and it is so rich. It is so reawakening. You just have to trust it and go there. And then what you start to discover is that it truly, truly leads you through your life. And it's leading you even when you don't know it. But a lot of times, we really, truly don't trust it. We pay attention to our mind instead of to it, and we get into trouble. I have learned over the years, when I go to an important meeting, rather than spend the ride there thinking over all the stuff that I have to talk about and that I have to say and that I have to sell and that I have to be available to, rather than giving myself over to all the mental construct of projection of how that meeting should go and how I will do this or do that and manipulate the room or whatever it is I need to do in a meeting, I don't anymore do any of that. Now, when I go to a meeting, I sit in myself. I let go of all of my strategies. I let go of all of the stuff I had learned, of everything that I prepared. I let go of everything. And all I do is I open to myself and I go forward. It's the most phenomenal thing there is. Because when you walk in the room, you are present to what is rather than bringing in your mind and your expectations and your sense of what it should be or would be or could be. You're just there. You're just there. And when you're just there, whatever the other person is bringing to the meeting will meet your presence. Your presence is the most powerful force in the universe. And what happens, no matter what dance the other person does, you meet it with presence. And when you meet it with presence, it speaks to the self. It has extraordinary capacity to arrive at what needs to be arrived at in that very moment, which usually has enormous benefit to you. Learning to do that in every situation, when you go on a date, you're on your first date and you're scared to death and you're planning, I'm going to say this to be funny and I'm going to do that, and if I really, you know, figure out this kind of strategy, this will really play back in my favor. Throw that all out. Go to the date present. Go present. Just be. Be yourself. self that you love and just present that self. Or even forget presenting it. Be it. And watch what happens. It may not be the outcome that you want, but it will be the outcome in a sense that yourself wants, or the universe wants. You may not have a second date, but then that's fine, because the one thing you're looking for will recognize itself. Presence recognizes presence. And when two beings are present, the universe is alive with its fullness. Extraordinary things take place in the world and in your life and in the cosmos. This is what we're here to do. One of the ways to know that you are beginning to trust yourself is that part of you is going to feel very uncomfortable. That's what happens. In the early phases of trusting yourself, you are uncomfortable. You will drive to that meeting going, because if you try not thinking and not planning and not strategizing and just being yourself, you will go back and forth between, can I do this, can I do this, can I do this? And then you just let go, and you let go. That discomfort is simply a signal to you that you are switching allegiance from your mind to yourself. It's not a bad thing. It is the very essence of spiritual practice. Not that you want to get anything from it, just the opposite. What you get is the presence itself. That's what you get. And in a sense, you don't even really get it because you already have it and you already are it. So all that happens is you recognize what is there at this moment. And that recognition fills you in a way that is indescribable. It makes you one with all that is. And if you want to command, if you will, the moment, let the moment command you. You will be in as powerful, if that's what you're looking for, or what it's looking for, as powerful a state as imaginable. But if you do it for power, if you try to use this for power, then it becomes, I use this word guardedly, satanic. When you take God's energy, or your self energy, and use it for your ego mind's benefit, you can run into trouble. You're not here to serve your personality or your ego. You're here to be one with yourself. It is really the idea of thy will be done, letting God's work work. Interestingly, much of your ego desire is completely in alignment with the universe. You have not been created by mistake. Your individuality is not something that just happened. It's part of a vast, if you will, universal process. So your particular desires, wants, hopes, and ambitions are exactly in alignment with the universe. Striving to be the best person you can, striving to find the career that speaks to you and nurtures your soul, trying to find the relationship that gives you a kind of fullness and vibrancy and joy. That's what life is. You pursue the thing you want. But you can also pursue a lot of things inappropriately. And we all know that. We can, and often do, pursue the wrong person, the wrong job, the wrong skill, because we want something from it. We want something to make us personally more viable, more present to the world, more honored by the world, more famous, richer, whatever that is in our lives that makes us want us as a separate entity to be glorified. It's not about glorifying you. It's about glorifying yourself. And you have to make the difference. You have to know serving something larger ultimately serves you. But the minute you take credit, the minute you own it, the minute you think, I did it, it's no longer part of the whole. I mean, it is, but you have lost your connection to you. You have turned it outward. You have made it about this tiny little speck of being that is your personality ego, and you have forgotten the self which is truly working inside you. The whole of our life is to keep surrendering this outer need for self-aggrandizement, this outer need for being honored, to be made special, to let go of that, to just keep letting go of that. It's hard because the programming is about that. The programming is about me, 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 I want, I have. All of that stuff is habitual mistraining in a way. I say mistraining because it gets you in trouble. It's absolutely programmed into the system. And there's no way to avoid all of what I'm talking about. The only thing you can do is finally recognize what you're doing and go, personally, I'm going to take control of this misprogramming and let go. I am going to, with help, surrender my misunderstanding and return to myself. That's really our spiritual program. And so all you do in this class is very simple. You keep saying, please help me to surrender. Please help me to surrender. Help me to let go of this need to glorify my puny little outer self at the expense of this glorious thing that is already glorified, which is my very core of being. Be that. And when you are that, and I watched Rudy come into that. It was one of the great teachings of my life. I watched this guy, and he was a guy, who was struggling to let go of all of this outer conditioning and open to this self. And as I watched him pull it off, what I saw was Rudy profound. Rudy essential. The very core of this being. And it radiated through this man. And it looked like Rudy, and it sounded like Rudy, and it felt like and tasted like Rudy, and it was Rudy, but it was completely Rudy because he was himself. He was and became or remembered himself. And it just flushed through space and time. It filled the room. It was so complete and so real and so extraordinary. And it was the same guy I knew, but it wasn't. It was something greater. But it wasn't greater than Rudy. It was Rudy. And the very same thing that made Rudy, Rudy, is making each of you yourself. And when I sit with you, and when I look at your eyes, and I see the self radiating back at me, all I can do is say, thank you. Because I see the extraordinary nature in every single person in this room. Extraordinary beauty. And the only thing that keeps you from seeing that is bad habits, thinking of yourself in the smallest possible way. Let go of that. Let go of that sense of trusting your mind. Let go of trusting your ego and your personality and all your special sweet little tricks that you use to make people love you. Let go of that. Trust that they will love you without any of that. And if they don't, that's their problem. Because they will truly love you when you are present. And they will love you when you are present because you present them at that moment with themselves. Yourself is the self. Yourself is their self. It is one self. And when you are yourself, you bring to somebody the very thing they are seeking in themselves. When you represent that to them, you bring them the greatest thing possible. And if they're smart enough to see it, they will awaken to it, and they will awaken their own self to who they are. And then they will let go of their mind, they will let go of their habitual patterns, and they will go, I want to be what you are. That's what I did when I saw Rudy. I said, I don't know what you've done or how you've done it, but that's what I want. And it's taken, 40 years. But it is worth the time and effort because, you know, even though it takes 40 years to move a 16th of an inch, better to take 40 years to do that than to go around the world and not move at all. So, as best as possible, try in little small incremental ways to trust yourself. Let go of your mind, let go of your conceptualizing, let go of thinking you know the answer. Trust the force, Luke. That's what works. Any questions? We can't always get in touch with our emotions as easily as we would like. I'll tell you what works for me. I don't know what it is. It's sitting in the lack of gratitude, sitting in the very space that's not feeding you, not giving you what you want. In other words, when you're with somebody you can love or should love and don't feel love, sit there long enough. It's really interesting what happens. You'll feel like, what's wrong with me? I can't do this. But you just don't move away from it. You just sit there, and you just sit there, and you just sit there, and something goes, it breaks through. It doesn't break through if you run away. It only breaks through if you stay there. Gratitude is the same thing. If you just sit in the space of no gratitude, which is a real space, it's an absence, but it's there, and you go there, and you go, what's wrong with me? You know, try to get out of your mind and just go there and just be ungrateful. And watch what happens. It's like the spring rises up inside you from yourself, and suddenly it begins to flood you with gratitude. Because you can't make it happen, you can't force it to happen, but you can look at the place where it's not happening and it will allow it to come into being. If it doesn't happen in that exact moment, if you don't have the time to sit there long enough to deal with your deadness or whatever it is that's obstructing it, just making that effort will allow it to sort of, it's like knocking on the door. You'll be 2 days later, you'll be walking down the street and suddenly your heart will fly open and the message will have gotten through and the gratitude will surge up. You don't have to have it as an immediate reaction. Sometimes, you know, when I teach each of you, I need, and the universe needs, immediate response. That's what the class to me is, deliver what's needed now, because that's what has to happen. But a lot of the time, on my own, I walk around and I feel I need something, I ask for it, and then I walk away. I plant the seed, if you will. I send the message to, you know, wherever it's supposed to go, and then it has to get delivered and it has to be returned. The important thing is, and this is really remarkable, it comes back. The answer comes back. The thing you need comes back. Knock and ye shall receive, or knock and it shall be opened to you. Ask and ye shall receive. That happens. It comes. So don't get impatient and don't let your mind get in the way of it, because it's only the mind that's kind of, it's not working. What's wrong with me? Something's wrong with me. Of course, that immediately makes it almost impossible for it to kind of penetrate and come through. But if you stay focused and you stay open and you stay available, it will arrive. Does that help?
I'm wondering, what made you want to become a teacher and why do you do it?
The reason I wanted to become a teacher, I'll tell you how it happened. I was in Bloomington, Indiana, where I was studying with my teacher at the time, and I decided if I ask him if I can teach, he will tell me no, and he'll tell me why. And when he tells me why, I'll know what more work I have to do on myself. So we were walking down the street, and I said, Michael, I would like to teach. And I waited for the why not. And he said, fine, start tonight. And there was no why not, there was no anything. In fact, he had been waiting for all these years, really, for me to ask. He would have let me done it 2 or 4 years before. But I hadn't asked. So originally I asked because I wanted to learn more about myself, But in a deeper sense, that's exactly what it was about. Teaching is the best way to learn. For any teacher, anyone who ever teaches knows that you learn more once you have to codify it or present it to other people. It expresses itself to you. Then you either learn that you're a good teacher or a bad teacher. Some people get it. You know, some brilliant people cannot teach what they know. Other people are not even so good at what they do, but they teach it brilliantly. And you just start to discover your particular skills. I found, as a writer anyway, or as a communicator, as a filmmaker, that I can talk. And that I can sit. And that I can, out of a hunger for this, exchange a kind of, if you will, energy or presence or myself with other people. And so having an ability to do that and having something in me, in an odd sense, needing to do that, I do it. But it's not about Bruce. It really isn't. I mean, if it was about Bruce, you know, I would probably be trying to sell a lot of books and go on radio and television and, you know, make this a big thing. I've never done that. To me, it's like I'm a little drinking fountain in the middle of a mall, you know. Anybody who wants to get a drink gets a drink, and that's all it is for me. But that drinking fountain, when it's flowing, feels great, whether it's, you know, Niagara Falls or just that little thing you know, it's a great thing to be that flow. Does that answer the question? A little bit?
I think so.
Okay.
Bridget? This is a, someone gave me some advice that I should sit with and be with my worst case scenario of not getting what I want. And what do you think about that? Do you think that's just sort of a game to play with your mind and not really necessarily?
No, if you sit with it with your mind, if you sit with your worst-case scenario in your mind and pick it apart in a million different ways, well, that's going to make you... Well, I think if you sit with it truly in a still space, it's great, it has value. But choosing to sit with it, I mean, I guess that's a conscious act, and it's not unwise, but the worst-case scenario will come up in a lot of us more readily than we imagine. Just there it is. And that's when we usually go the other direction, go this way, go that way. We don't want to know it, or we pick it apart with our mind and we can make ourselves crazy. Sitting with the worst case scenario, which is there for everybody, is a little bit like Tibetans sitting in a graveyard, because that is the worst case scenario. You're going to die. You may not die in ways you like, but you're going to die. So when you die, there's no more you as you know yourself, and that's pretty traumatizing. What happens when you sit with the truth of that? It's very awakening. It's really powerful and surprising. You know, a lot of us think of death as such a cataclysmic event, but it's actually a rather mind-clearing event, and it's rather liberating.
Yeah,
can be.
I don't know if I'm lying to myself or not. It's more of a problem in the world than
leaving, right. So if worst case scenario is, you know, not functioning, not getting what you want, you know, not knowing what you want, living a day-to-day life that's whatever, tedious or unsatisfying or whatever it is, and projecting that way into the future, you know, which is usually where worst case scenarios come from. It's not like it's just bad right now. It's going to be this way forever. And that's where it gets hard to deal with. That's mind. That's mind living in the future. You have no idea what the future is. Life turns on a dime, as Rudy always said. You're going this way today, and then suddenly tomorrow you're going this way, and you can even make a choice to go in another direction and see what that does. The worst case scenario is a mind event. It's not a true event. There is no worst case scenario, really, in life. It's just a projection of your fears. And projecting your fears is creating a universe that feeds back your fears, and that loop creates a universe in which fear is predominant. And you live in fear. That's, in a way, the worst case scenario, that you have created a horrible universe for yourself. You can change that by thinking, but going back into yourself, by really going back inside and saying, what can we do, if you want to put it that way? How can we change this? Be the we, if you need to, in that dual sense, and just go, what do I really want? And how can I find something good? Now, if you want something that is totally dependent on an outside force to deliver it, then you're going to be somewhat frustrated. But what can you do now. So if you want someone to give you something, often the correlative to that is give something that you want. It's a really interesting dynamic. Give back the very thing to the universe that you want from someone else. If you feel nobody gives you, work in a soup kitchen and give back. Just watch what happens when you start to give to life the very thing you want to get. It's just a different approach, but it really opens you up to something that frees you from the why don't I have, why don't I get, why doesn't life serve my desires, wishes, needs. Life doesn't do that. Not always. I mean, sometimes it does, which is, you know, like of the draw. You'll get some things that really satisfy, some things that don't. Most lives are not completely satisfying. I don't care what life you have, how big your life is. There's always stuff going on, and depending on your nature, you're focusing on the stuff that's not happening or the stuff that is happening. If you're lucky enough to focus on what's happening, you live a little bit happier life. But you can control that. You can make choices. Rudy said the great thing about a spiritual life is it gives you choice. Choice is, this isn't working. What can I do? I can do something else. But you have to take charge of the doing. You cannot make somebody love you. You cannot make somebody give you the job you want. You cannot make somebody honor you for anything in the world. All you can do is honor yourself, give yourself what you want and need, and give yourself the love you wish other people would give you. You can do that, and it takes care of a lot of stuff. Life can play itself out in a million different ways. Nothing you can do about it. How you respond to what it does is your total purview. That's the realm you are the master of. Master it by being loving to yourself, giving to yourself, honoring of yourself, and you will see that you get and have the life that fulfills, even if it's not delivered from outside. You know, I mean, I wish we all had all that we wanted in the world, and the reason we probably come back a billion times is because we keep thinking we can get it. You know, and you see lives that almost do, that almost give everything, but no life gets everything. And most lives are impoverished, and most lives are lived with very little. On the other hand, all lives are lived with everything. All lives are lived with the self. And the self is all you truly want in this world. And you watch people who have that. They're sitting outside looking at the flowers, and they are in a state of ecstasy and joy. Period, you know, you look at this guy, you know, you just look at that, and you go, you don't have to go to a movie, you don't have to do anything except be present in this world with this fullness of you, and all that suffering becomes secondary. And when it becomes secondary, or when it even starts to disappear, the very openness and life that comes through you as a result of that is an attractor of life. So unexpected things can happen. This projection of negativity all the way to the end disappears because you're not even thinking of the end. You're just thinking of the flowers. And it changes. It changes the dynamic. Okay? Anyone else?
Yeah, just sort of what you were just saying, that I feel a lot of change and growth like going on now. My life, some of it's real uncomfortable and anxiety provoking, and some is very pleasurable. And I don't know, I just feel like an old part of me is shedding away, and it's very scary. And I notice I'm not as ambitious anymore or chasing in the rat race, and I don't really care. My question is, sometimes how do you know when that you're on the right track there, or you're just, sometimes I just don't want to do anything, and I just want to sit around, you know. How do you know when you're not just being lazy and not doing anything, but it feels different, you know, it feels like I don't need to.
You know, the mind isn't going to know the answer to that question, because the mind will give you this side and that side and go back and forth, and you will be in a state of confusion when you ask questions like that. What will know and what does know is you. And it knows the answer to the very question you're asking me. You know when you're lazy, I know you do. And you know when the rat race is no longer serving you. And I think you're in a position where both are occurring. Letting go of the rat race for you in a way is liberating. And I've seen it in you. There's a richer life emerging inside you because you're not going after the, whatever you want to call it, the illusions of life. But there are moments where, as a result of that, you're also falling into what you might call lazy patterns. So two things are happening, or probably millions of things happening, but they are provoked by what is something that's, I think, very, very vibrant in you, which is you are changing. Things are changing. It's an extraordinary thing. You know, not everybody breaks through themselves, their own delusions and illusions and hopes and ambitions. Not everybody pulls that off. You are reaching a new place in yourself, which is allowing for a kind of comfort that hasn't been there in a long time. But you can also get too comfortable, and then you get static, and that will only do one thing, which is produce this more discomfort again. And then you'll have to bring back ambition and all this other stuff. You have to stay true to this deep space of self and do what it says. And it may tell you, let go of all that ambition, which is fine, but then it may start to say, do this or do that. It doesn't usually let you sit around and do nothing. Life is not a static form. If you look around you, there's nothing that's not growing, that's not in play. I mean, it's either growing or it's falling apart, one or the other. But it's all moving. It's all in motion. If you become too inert, something will start changing you again, and then you'll have to find a new direction for yourself. So allow the change to take place, but stay open to what wants to express itself and be there. Meet it. Be available.
That hasn't become clear.
Well, it will. It will. So let it happen. There's a very good thing that a lot of this stuff's falling away, and I can see the value of that in you. But the new thing will arrive, and when it does, say okay.
Is it a process that takes a while?
It can. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like you wake up in the morning, oh, I think I'll be a...
No, it comes, it arises in you. You know, you'll start to feel, I need something more. I need something different. It starts to come as a kind of let's call it a yearning or an urge. And the yearning and urge of human experience is what leads us forward. Ultimately, the great yearning is for God. That's the great yearning. But then there's lots of yearnings for other things, and there's a difference between wanting them and yearning for them. And yearning is meaningful. And you feel it because it comes from a depth. It doesn't come from the top of your head. It doesn't satisfy some immediate sort of pleasure. It's something that's about you in the fundamental way. And when you feel that, it will be there. It will announce itself. And believe me, it will come. Okay? Anyone else?
I just feel lately in my life, I feel like there's all these different forces, things that are asking things of me, and that I'm constantly being asked to like give, and I have this tendency to just want to shut it all out, but yet it's all stuff that I've asked for. So how do I get this sort of expansiveness, or I mean, how do I accommodate everything, you know, without feeling out of control, I guess?
Right. The only thing that gets out of control is the mind. Again, it starts projecting and freaking out. In the moment, the mind can serve you. You know, if you start to feel out of control in the moment, you can just say no to something. Rather than say no to the whole future of something, you just say no to this moment of something. You just go, I can't do this now. It feels, it's removing me from myself. The demand for something external to you is not allowing you to be you. And you know that when that happens, and then you just go, whoa. And then when you do that, you'll either feel like you have removed yourself from this disturbing force, or in having done that, you can accommodate that force. But you now are interacting with it from a real place rather than a mind place. The mind place rejects and is fearful all the time because it's overwhelming to the system. But the self is never overwhelmed, ever. But it knows what serves and what doesn't serve. And when you pay attention to that, it goes, not now. And usually what it's saying not now to is, again, a mind event. You know, I have all these events that bring me a lot of tension. And I watch them come up, and now I look at them and go, not now. Because I can't do it now. This isn't the time for it to happen. I will at some point give attention to that thing because it's there. It has to be attended to, but not now. Right now, I'm in a different place. And then I find myself ready, and I go, okay, let's go to this. You know, it's like putting stacks of paper that you'll do the priority ones first, then you go to this stack, and then you go, oh, I don't, the ones you don't want to do, you got to get to them. At some point, you go there and you do it. But if somebody comes in the room and says, you've got to do that stack now, what do? You go, okay. And then you just take the job on and you do it. And if you do it without resistance and without anger and without frustration, it gets done. It just gets done. And life works. But it's all about being conscious and making conscious choices so that you're not victimized by the world. There's no reason that the world should victimize you. You have the right to say, wait, and find your center again, find yourself again, and then you may have to wait another hour or two or a day. But you just do it. And if you're true to yourself, you will be true to the other selves, you will be true to the circumstance, to the situation, to everything, because it responds to and respects the self. Everything does ultimately, even if it gets angry at you and throws all its crap at you, it won't affect you because you're being true to this. But if you're in your mind, you know, you'll feel guilty and terrible and, you know, what's wrong with me and why are they doing this and I'm burdened. And, you know, people live like that. They live whole lives like that. But when you are in touch with you, you don't have to be. Okay? Is that it? Okay, Blanche and I are heading back to New York on Tuesday. We'll be back here on the 20th of September, and we will. I'll be around for a couple of weeks during that period. Everything else after that gets a little confusing, but I will let you know what the plan is. I do know that this September represents the 40th year of my studying with Rudy. In some way, I want to acknowledge that. I don't know what I want to do yet, but I will think of something. And also in January, for whatever it's worth, the 24th, for whatever it's worth to you, it's a lot to me, it's Rudy's 80th birthday. So I would like to do something for that. So those are the two events that are sort of looming as we go down the road.
Are you sure the new Rudy film?
I think so. I'll show parts of it. It's all in segments, so it won't be just, there's so many different things to show. But the new Rudy film is going to be out, I think, in about a week or two. And those of you who contributed were offered the opportunity to buy it at almost a cost. And everyone else will have to buy it a little bit more expensively or not. They can come here and watch it. But it will be out. And it is as wonderful as I tried to imply in my email a few months ago. It's just moment to moment. There's so much richness in being able to see so much of a person's life that you didn't even know was on film, even though I filmed it in many cases. You forget over the years that it's there, and it's like brings Rudy back to life in ways that are, I mean, truly unexpected and beautiful. And it's a great teaching. It's a great teaching to watch somebody flowering in that way. Anyway, thank you again for coming. And as I said, you know, if anybody wants to stay for brunch, Bo brought bagels, and I'm going to hang around for a couple hours. So it'd just be great to see you. And if not, have a great week and a great month. I'll see you at the end of September.